Hey, can I let you in on a little secret? Oh, I'm obsessed with the Drop app. Drop makes it so easy to score free gift cards just for doing my everyday shopping at places like Ulta, Sam's Club, and Lyft. So if you're like me and love a good shopping spree, download Drop today and join the secret club of savvy shoppers. And use my code GETDROP999 to get $5.
Upgrade your listening with Bose Quiet Comfort Ultra Headphones. Breakthrough Bose Immersive Audio makes everything sound more natural than ever. World-class noise cancellation gets quieter than any Bose headphone yet. And the high-fidelity audio is tailored to your ears only. So highs hit harder, bass drops deeper, and you feel every note of the track. This is leveled up listening. Bose Quiet Comfort Ultra Headphones. Dive in deeper at Bose.com/iHeart.
For each person living with myasthenia gravis, or MG, their journey with this rare condition is unique. That's why Untold Stories, Life with Myasthenia Gravis, a new podcast from iHeartRadio in partnership with Argenix, is exploring the extraordinary challenges and personal triumphs of underserved communities living with MG. Host Martine Hackett will share these powerful perspectives from real people with MG, so their experiences can help inspire the MG community and educate others about this rare condition. Listen to find strength in community on the MG journey on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Introducing Uber Teen Accounts. If you have a teenager, you probably drive them around a lot. Maybe you're even driving them right now. New Uber Teen Accounts are a parent-supervised Uber account with always-on safety features that let your teen request a ride when you can't take them yourself. Your teen gets to ride with a highly rated driver, and you get to follow along with real-time notifications and live trip tracking in your Uber app. Add your teen to your Uber account today. Available in select locations. See app for details.
I'm Jonathan Strickland, host of the podcast Tech Stuff. I sat down with Sudhin Shahani of Surf Air Mobility, which recently went public. We talked about flying in electric planes and regional air mobility. The future of travel doesn't have to include crowded airports, cramped seats, or long road trips. It can be as simple as using an app to book a short-range flight on an electric plane. Learn more on Tech Stuff on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we return to Our American Stories. Up next, another story in our series about us. That is the story of America, with Hillsdale College professor and author of Land of Hope, Bill McClay. If you know or have kids, Bill has a phenomenal young reader's edition of his book as well. Pick it up at Amazon or wherever you get your books. When we last left off, America had beaten Britain at Yorktown. But what came next? Nobody really knew. Let's get into this story. Take it away, Bill.
I want to talk for a minute at the outset here about the song that we sometimes say was played by that band in Yorktown after America's great victory. That song called The World Upside Down, a British song. The idea was that the British Army band played this tune when they surrendered. It was the custom that the British Army would play an American or French tune, but supposedly Washington refused that and insisted that they play a British march. That's the way the tale is told. A lot of people think it never happened. But it's a wonderful story, and sometimes perpetuating these kinds of stories is important. It was an English ballad. It was written in response to the efforts of Parliament in the 1640s to not exactly ban the celebration of Christmas, but to make it into an extremely solemn occasion. So without the festivities, without the gifts, without all the finery and, you know, glorious excess that tends to go with Christmas in certainly the English-speaking world and much of the rest of the world. And it didn't go over well. This song arose, and I'll read you the first stanza of it. Listen to me, and you shall hear. News hath not been this 1,000 year. Since Herod, Caesar, and many more, you never heard the like before. Holy days are despised. New fashions are devised. Old Christmas is kicked out of town, yet let's be content and the times lament. You see, the world turned upside down. A sort of pro-Christmas song, but it's ironic. Turning the world upside down didn't really solve some of the fundamental issues facing the nation, some of which were even visible in the war itself. Not everybody was on board for the idea of a revolution or independence, and many who did fight didn't really see it as a full-scale revolution that would include a revolution within colonial society. Some people would say the Revolutionary War was a civil war, our first civil war. It's a complicated thing. What was the American Revolution? What was the war really about? One historian, Carl Becker, said the war was a war about home rule. He asked the question, was the war about home rule or about who would rule at home? Let me unpack that. Home rule means, would the Americans rule themselves as opposed to being ruled by the British? Who would rule at home meant which Americans would rule at home under home rule? Would it be the same elite classes that were connected to the imperial regime? Would it be the lawyers? Would it be the doctors, the professional class? Or would it include ordinary Americans? One point needs to be made again and again about the revolution itself is it wasn't an elite movement. It required the active support, beginning with the boycotts. It was something that appealed to the people. Thomas Paine didn't write just for the elites. He wrote for the common man as well. So the victory, which is a victory for equality in the language of the Declaration of Independence, would seem to mean maybe those who would rule at home would be a wider and more diverse cast of characters, not just the elite. That's one complexity. Of course, another complexity is the institution of slavery. When you undertake a revolution that's about freedom, how do you justify the perpetuation, even protection, of an institution that is the antithesis of freedom? And that the revolutionaries themselves used the language of slave to accuse the British of being tyrants. They would reduce us to slavery. They said it again and again. So it wasn't as if they didn't know what slavery was. They just didn't see it as applying to this uncomfortably settled institution in some parts of the country. So what would a revolutionary, a new American government look like? Recall the wonderful, admirable, magnificent Declaration of Independence. Does declare independence, but it doesn't declare what's coming next. It leaves a lot of things up in the air. It leaves just how much of a union was this union going to be. It leaves that up in the air. So what would self-rule look like? What would a new government look like? These were questions that now had to be answered. It had to be done. So a couple of things that the founders, who are very diverse in their opinions, let me using the term founders deceive you into thinking they all agreed about everything. They didn't. But they tended to agree on a couple of things. That self-rule meant virtuous citizens were necessary for civic life to flourish. You had to have people who did the right thing, not because they were coerced into doing so, but because it sprang from a sense of what was right, of what was virtuous, that had been inculcated in them from the start. You needed a virtuous citizenry. It was thought that America had a sufficiently virtuous citizenry to be self-governed. Second thing is that size was an important consideration, size and scale. This had always been the view of theorists of republican government, going back to ancient times, going back to Aristotle. And in modernity, the very influential Montesquieu, French political theorist, read by many of the founders. The Republic couldn't be big because it couldn't depart too far from the model of face-to-face institutions with strong interpersonal relationships between people who knew one another and could deliberate together. Aristotle and Montesquieu both set a limit to the size that a political entity could be if it was going to be a republic, if it was going to be self-governing, and that bigger than that, you were really taking your chances. And chances were that your chances weren't going to work out too well for you. So how to do that? How to organize a self-governing entity with virtuous citizens on a sufficiently targeted scale? That was the problem. How to do that? There was also something they all agreed about. Concentration of power was a danger. A giant continental republic that was completely consolidated was not going to work. It's what they were rebelling against, literally.
And you're listening to Hillsdale College professor Bill McClay tell one heck of a story about our own country. And my goodness, some of the themes, some of the battles still resonate today. I love those questions he asked. Was the war about home rule, or who would rule at home? And of course, this whole idea of the concentration of power in one place. And my goodness, are we still having that battle? Some people want Washington to be the center of power. Others want the state capitals to be the centers of power. And that dialogue, that disagreement that was happening then, well, it's still happening now. When we come back, more of the remarkable story of us, the story of America, here on Our American Story. For each person living with myasthenia gravis, or MG, their journey with this rare neuromuscular condition is unique. That's why Untold Stories: Life with Myasthenia Gravis, a new podcast from iHeartRadio in partnership with Argenix, is exploring the extraordinary challenges and personal triumphs of underserved communities living with MG. Host Martine Hackett will share powerful perspectives from people living with the debilitating muscle weakness and fatigue caused by this rare disorder. Each episode will uncover the reality of life with myasthenia gravis, from early signs and symptoms to obtaining an accurate diagnosis and finding care. Every person with MG has a story to tell. And by featuring these real-life experiences, this podcast hopes to inspire the MG community, educate others about this rare condition, and let those living with it know that they are not alone. Listen to Untold Stories: Life with Myasthenia Gravis on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nissan's electric vehicles run on a special electricity, not the electricity that turns on light bulbs or runs through your outlets. Think about it. What's that rush that gets you excited and creative sparks fly? I'm talking that spine-tingling goosebumps feeling that electrifies your body and soul. It could be the simple win of leaving on time for your morning commute, locking eyes with your crush, or scoring the largest deal of your career. But really, it's pushing new ideas forward and being fearless, believing that you can achieve anything you set your mind to. Even though it may be uneasy, the journey ahead will produce great results. And that's the most thrilling ride. Empowering yourself to embrace any new adventure that comes your way. And you can get that same electrifying feeling when driving a Nissan. Nissan is ever evolving and changing the game through electric vehicle innovation. Because the electricity their cars generate not only moves engines, but it also moves the emotions of those who drive them. To learn more about Nissan's electric vehicle lineup, visit www.nissanusa.com.
I'm Jonathan Strickland, host of the podcast Tech Stuff. I sat down with Sudhin Shahani of Surf Air Mobility, which recently went public. We talked about flying in electric planes and regional air mobility. The future of travel doesn't have to include crowded airports, cramped seats, or long road trips. It can be as simple as using an app to book a short-range flight on an electric plane. Learn more on Tech Stuff on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mornings can be stressful. Checking emails before you're out of bed and, ugh, you forgot to steam your clothes. Is there enough time for breakfast? But hey, at least last night you planned ahead and booked an Uber Reserve ride to the office. Schedule a ride up to 90 days in advance. Plus, drivers will wait up to 15 minutes after the planned pickup time. Let Uber Reserve make your mornings a little easier. Uber Reserve. Get your ride right. See app for details.
NFL Sunday Ticket is now on YouTube and YouTube TV, which means that it just got easier to be an NFL fan. Like, maybe you like the Bears, but you're hibernating in Panthers territory. But with NFL Sunday Ticket, you can watch your favorite team's out-of-market Sunday afternoon games no matter where you live. NFL Sunday Ticket, now on YouTube and YouTube TV. Go to youtube.com/NFLST to get $50 off. Terms and embargoes apply. Offer ends 9/19. No refunds. Subscription auto-renews.
Turn to Our American Stories and the next installment of our series about us, the Story of America series, with Professor Bill McClay, author of Land of Hope and the terrific Young Readers Edition, which you can get at Amazon or all the usual suspects, and I urge you to do just that. When we last left off, the founders were concerned about a concentration of power being the guiding force of their new nation. It's what they were rebelling against, after all. Let's return to the story. Here again is Bill McClay.
Obviously, it would be important to keep a lot of power in the states. This was vitally important to all of the founders, or nearly all of them. Nothing else would be acceptable at that time. So what came after the Revolution, but before the Constitution, was something called the Articles of Confederation. The Articles were adopted from the outset. They were never formally ratified during the Revolutionary War, but it was sort of understood that they were in effect. And they had a very clear statement. Let me read you Article 2 of the Articles of Confederation. Each state retains its sovereignty, freedom, and independence, and every power, jurisdiction, and right which is not by this confederation delegated to the United States in Congress assembled. That's pretty strong. Notice they use the word confederation. It's not by this confederation delegated to the United States in Congress assembled. You know, your association with the word confederation may go with the Confederacy of the Old South, the rebellious side in the Civil War. But the word has a more general meaning of a very loose federation, not a precise meaning, but a very loose confederation. So they're saying states are sovereign. Every power, jurisdiction, and right not granted, specifically enumerated, delegated to the United States, theirs, the states. So that's a pretty strong endorsement of the idea that we're not going to have a big consolidated nation state, modern nation state, such as we would have if we had a king. And the structure of the articles reflected this. Every state in the Congress had a single vote. So to get anything done, you needed to have either a unanimous vote or a supermajority. It needed to be overwhelmingly popular and acceptable to all concerned. This shows just how concerned they were about centralized power taking hold. And I will say this for them, how smart they were to understand that they couldn't just depend on people's sentiments. It was had to be present and firmly rooted in the structure of the law itself. They built the law in a way that ensured that the states would have the bulk of the power. It did mean that Congress wasn't able to do much of anything in terms of foreign policy, in terms of internal trade, in terms of taxation, in terms of a lot of other things, raising the revenues to run a full-blown national government. The articles were pretty inadequate. But I do want to be fair and mention one thing that the Congress did under the Articles of Confederation that was surpassingly good. And that was the Northwest Ordinance. It forbade the importation of the institution of slavery in the Northwestern states. Now, Northwest at that time meant, you know, Illinois, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, that part of the country. Some of you may know there's a university in Chicago called Northwestern, and it gets its name from that notion of the North, old Northwest. It did many other things. It abolished primogeniture, the inheritance of a deceased father, going to the eldest son in entirety. That was abolished. What that meant is that America, right off the bat, wealth was going to be more widely distributed. You weren't going to have great estates in which the eldest son presided over the great estate, and the other sons were left to kind of join the clergy or the army or to do what they could, as in the countries of Europe. No, everybody was going to get an equal share, roughly equal, some part of the inheritance. And that was going to lead to diffusion of wealth, diffusion of social condition, rough equality. I think almost as important was the method that it established for the creation of new states. You know, this is often an issue in the expansion of a country. How do you bring in new parts without them being treated as conquered provinces or having a lesser status? The Northwest Ordinance was really, really very, very, very good about this. It created something Daniel Boorstin, the historian, called it the Add-a-State Plan. The Western lands would be able to enter the Union on terms exactly equal to those of the existing states. They wouldn't be like colonial dependencies. They would enter the Union on the same terms as everybody else. This is really quite brilliant. We take it for granted. And something else to mention, I mentioned the importance of a virtuous citizen. The Northwest Ordinance explicitly sets aside public lands for educational institutions and makes the following statement about them. Religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged. It's interesting, the founders saw religion, morality, and knowledge all going together. So there's some good things about the Articles of Confederation, but it was wanting in other respects. The British had refused to withdraw from the military posts they had in the Northwest, despite the fact that the Treaty of Paris commanded them to do so, the treaty that had ended the Revolution. The Spanish had control of the Mississippi River, the lifeline of the central, what would be central, then Western states. It was going to be very important that a hostile power not be in control of the Mississippi, and specifically the city of New Orleans. So all this obviously needed to be taken care of. The British needed to be moved out. The Spanish needed to be persuaded to abandon control of the Mississippi. But we didn't have a government that could do it. We didn't have a government that could engage in effective diplomacy. And there were other problems. There was economic fallout from the war. The British had been, you know, our great trading partners. The British restricted American imports and dumped low-priced goods on our markets, which made life very difficult for the often